powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. Guys, the Seahawks send out their weekly media guide where they basically give you a bunch of stats heading into the game. And no spoilers, but sometimes it's where I look to get some bits of trivia for when we do our game shows. I don't want either of you to look at it, but it's those kinds of bits of information, right? This guy had the most yards ever against this team. Here's the head-to-head matchup, etc. And there's one thing that initially surprised me, and it was the number of times these two teams have faced off. Since 1976, obviously, the inaugural season for Seattle, the Saints and Seahawks have only faced each other 14 times. And I know that you're thinking, well, they aren't the same division. It's every 3 years. Yeah, like that makes sense. But I was surprised by that because you have some non-divisional opponents that you feel like they face frequently. It felt like for the longest time,
right,
facing the Carolina Panthers, they were like your fourth NFC West opponent that you were going to face.
Yeah.
Right? You had the Rams, Cardinals, and then you had like the
Carolina Panthers
thrown in there too.
Then also the Vikings.
49ers, obviously. Vikings were another one. And it felt like it was always, not only were they always facing the Vikings, it felt like the Vikings were always Monday night. Like it just, so anyways, I was surprised to see that. But the last time this team faced the Saints was in 2019. And I was thinking, then it just got me thinking of what these two franchises have in common, right? And it seems like a weird jump to make, but I was just kind of looking at two teams that haven't necessarily faced each other a ton, but have drawn a lot of comparisons to each other in that. Prior to Drew Brees leaving, you had this head coach, Sean Payton, and quarterback, Brees, combination that had all the talent in the world and had a very long stretch of sustained success. They had some seasons dip to 500 or below, but overwhelmingly sustained success in the same way that Seattle has and in the same way that the Packers have. And I know McCarthy isn't there anymore, but you had these head coach quarterback combinations. And yet some combinations, Brady and Belichick are the obvious one that comes to mind, but you've got like Nolan Bradshaw, a couple other guys. Some combinations have capitalized with like two or more Super Bowl titles, and then you have combinations of guys that are well-known, very successful head coaches and quarterbacks who are together for a decade or more, and they either don't get to the Super Bowl or they get one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just curious, opening up the conversation for us of like, why are some teams and why are some head coach quarterback combinations able to capitalize on it while others are not?
Well, really the only one in the modern day era has been the Patriots.
And
they've been, and when I say modern, I mean the 2000s. I mean, modern day era also includes like, you know, the 49ers run, the Cowboys run and all that. But, you know, you look at the Patriots, they've dominated the last two decades. It's been incredible to watch them have that sustained success. You have the greatest coach of all time. You have the greatest quarterback of all time. But really, in the midst of that, it has been some tremendous maneuvering from a roster construction standpoint. Some very difficult decisions along the way, parting ways with superstars that are hard to say goodbye with, but parting ways with them at the right time in order to capitalize on that. The other aspect of it is being adaptable and being willing to adapt your philosophy to the strengths of your quarterback and adapt your philosophy to the strengths of your team at that current moment. And there have been multiple iterations of what the Patriots have looked like in that time frame. And so part of the reasons that I believe that you look at some of these great head coaching quarterback duos that have never been able to fully capitalize and have that same run of success and be able to repeat it year in and year out or every other year or what have you, is because they are stubborn to some aspect or that they have struggles.
I think that when we're looking at Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, that's the case. Like, I think Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll have two different offensive philosophies. And what's happened is that you've had a quarterback who has become better over time, and you have a head coach a GM and a team that hasn't been able to tap back into the resources that it had earlier. And I don't mean, oh, the quarterback is taking up the salary cap so you can't go out in free agency and buy a ton of guys. I mean, like, you haven't drafted great guys. So you have a philosophy that Pete Carroll wants that he hasn't really been able to carry out to the full extent because he hasn't had the defensive players or the running backs he's wanted. And then you have Russell Wilson that can't really have his philosophy because they don't really have the offensive scheme around it. So, like, that is a problem with that pairing to me. But then I also look at
the resources that they invest into it.
Well, 1,000%. That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't, when you're successful for a long time, you don't get a high first round pick. You don't get pick number 6. You don't get pick number 10. You don't even get pick number 15.
But I don't think that that's even a good enough excuse here. If you don't get those high draft picks, then guess what? The Patriots didn't either.
Well, no.
So
why were
they able to have that same run of success?
Well, yes, but that's what I'm saying.
Even worse slot positioning than the Seahawks.
But what I'm saying is, I agree that drafting and talent acquisition and philosophy and being able to adapt, I think that plays a role in it. And I think it's also played a role in specifically what's happened with Seattle. But Jake, when I look at some of these other kind of tandems, you've got Marv Levy and Jim Kelly, Don Shula and Dan Marino, Tony Dungy and Peyton Manning, Reed and McNabb, and then the only ones I found with two or more that weren't like really old, I mean, Chuck Nolan, Terry Bradshaw, and then Shanahan and Elway, but like, there are some great pairings in here. Tony Dungy and Peyton Manning, you've got like Hall of Famers in here who won maybe a Super Bowl. In the case of Marino, you didn't win a single one. Sometimes I think it's just luck. Like, sometimes I think that just bad stuff happens when you feel like it shouldn't. And it's not making an excuse. I am not making an excuse for Seattle because I think some of Seattle's issues are done to themselves. They could have taken, for instance, Derrick Henry. We talked about Derrick Henry earlier. You said he should be in the front running for MVP. You know who the Seahawks took instead of Derrick Henry in that draft? Jermaine Ifedi. They went with Jermaine Ifedi. And their highest draft picks, like a lot of their defensive picks, they haven't even had a second contract with. So I am taking my criticism of Seattle aside because it's there and it's legit. But sometimes I do think there is a level of bad luck that happens. Like the Saints getting a horrible no call when they probably should have been able to go play the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Or losing that game against the Vikings. Like the Saints have just had bad luck. Drew Brees probably should have gone to 2 more Super Bowls.
Well, and Drew Brees also and the Saints and Sean Payton, they went through 8-8 seasons.
Right.
Ben Roethlisberger, they went through 8-8 seasons before. But I wouldn't attribute it to bad luck when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks. That to me is not the overall.
I don't think you're going to get to the Super Bowl every
factor.
Year if you draft everything.
I don't think so either,
right.
But bad luck is not what's happened. It's been more drafting issues. It's been more issues with who are you and having the correct identity and being able to draft and acquire to fit that identity and to, you know, make sure that everybody is on the same page moving forward, being willing to be adaptable and grow from that aspect as well. I think there's a whole lot of issues that you can point to. And when you're talking about Peyton Manning, you're talking about that group, like at least they went to, you know, AFC championships. Like they didn't get to Super Bowls, but they were consistently getting deep into the playoffs. The Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers, as much as you want to point to, you know, him not getting back to another Super Bowl and all of that, he's been to a lot of NFC championships and he hasn't gotten himself over the hump. I would take the Seahawks getting deeper into the playoffs and having a legitimate roster that is deep, that isn't just a conversation that we look at. The reality of the Seattle Seahawks that we've had over the last few years that I think that we've all unfortunately have not come to the conclusion yet because we want to be as optimistic as possible and we want to believe in that they've got, you know, when it comes to their stars and Pete Carroll being included in that conversation, that they have enough star quality talent that when they play to their best, they have the ability to get deeper into the playoffs. So you always have that hope and those aspirations of NFC Championship and Super Bowl, but they have not put together a roster that legitimately can compete to get deeper into the playoffs in quite some time. Right now they are a perennial playoff contender. They're not a perennial Super Bowl contender. That's the difference.
I also, I'm trying to figure out how much credit to give to a quarterback salary. On the one part, I think, well, you'd have more money to spend on an offensive line. You have more money to spend on the defense. On the other hand, when I look at when Seattle was at its most successful with this pairing, with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, it was in a year when pretty much all of their biggest stars were on rookie deals or cheap deals. Like, there was no one who was draining the resources of the team. It wasn't like, oh, Russell Wilson was on a rookie deal, so we got to go out and we really got to spend and we got to get Richard Sherman. We got to go out and spend and we got to get Earl Thomas.
Right.
No, those guys were on rookie deals. All these guys were like 23 years old
mm-hmm.
and 24 years old. So that's why you were able to do it. So when I look at Russell Wilson getting this much money, I think, okay, well, the only way you're going to be able to build around your team is free agency. Tapping into free agents that are affordable and then blossom for you, or drafting well. And that also means that you're no longer drafting top 15, top 20, but you've got to capitalize on those picks. So I put a little bit of emphasis on it, but not as much as some other people do, because I don't see it as Russell Wilson's holding your team back. I see it as the talent hasn't been there. You haven't had a roster as talented as you did in 2013 since then.
Right, and the hard part too is you reference the New Orleans Saints as you know, a team that's been very similar in a lot of aspects to the Seattle Seahawks in terms of their run and what they have done and what they have accomplished. You know, I mentioned some of those 8-8 seasons, some of those years where they were not as successful. Well, one of the other things that they have been able to do, and they haven't hit completely all across the board. But when they got those opportunities, they made the most of it. They found successful starters for them over the years that maybe not have sustained with the team or got that second contract, but within their first contract were good quality acquisitions that made a difference. Like, for example, in 2017, Trey Hendrickson is a guy that isn't no longer with the team. He's with the Bengals right now. He was their leading sack getter last year. He was a third-round pick. But during his rookie contract, he fulfilled that promise. Alvin Kamara, 2017 running back, he's been pretty good. Marcus Williams, he's your starting safety. Ryan Ramczyk, he's your right tackle. Marshawn Lattimore, one of the best corners in the game. 2017, they kill it in that draft, following up by a couple other ones. So just recent draft success or lack thereof, I believe, has been a big issue as to why this team hasn't been able to replenish those young stars and really replenish that defense the way that they were hoping and the way that they were planning to post the Legion of Boom era. And that's been a big reason why you're in the position you are.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. Right now, it's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Always fun talking to Danny. Can't wait to jump back into that conversation later. We'll go to this first down, though. Who has to step up for Pete Carroll's run-first approach to come alive this weekend?
This is all on the offensive line. It's not on a running back. It's not on a quarterback. It's not on DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. This is 100% on the offensive line if they're going to win this game and be successful in the running game. And here in cut number five, Ray Roberts was talking about, you know, kind of the issues that he saw early on with this offensive line. And quite frankly, the things that Ray Roberts is talking about, you hope are figured out.
I will say the players are good offensive linemen, but they haven't played as a good offensive line yet. Just watching the film and just watching their technique, some of them are really was rusty with the technique. The meshes, like on the double teams and the run game, wasn't like real sharp. The switching of line stunts in the passing game, the guys are on different levels, which makes that really difficult. And a lot of that stuff comes with the timing that it takes to get to know the guy beside you and be able to work together as one unit, but you didn't have the preseason reps. And so now they're trying to work themselves into that space during the season and then also off to a rough start.
So when you talk about that, I mean, some of the early issues that happen, yeah, you could say that it's chemistry issues that, hey, you know, you moved over Damian Lewis to left guard. You had Gabe Jackson there at right guard and still working together and trying to figure it out. You have a new center in Kyle Fuller. But ultimately, to me, this comes down to, have they figured out, what's the second half of that Pittsburgh game, that spark, that change in this offensive line that they needed to, now they can be that dominant front, that dominant group that can take it to anybody in the league. Doesn't matter what your stats are coming into it. And we're going to have a great test of that against the New Orleans Saints. And those are going to be the guys that are going to get this done and open the holes for guys like Alex Collins, open the holes for Rashad Penny, Travis Homer, and DJ Dallas. Alex Collins is a good running back, but as I said before, he's not a creator at the line of scrimmage. He's not a guy who's going to make you right when you are wrong. And the big reason why this running game was so successful against the Pittsburgh Steelers They were assignment sound. They worked well together. And I'm telling you, they opened up giant hole after giant hole, and they're going to have to do it again.
Second down. Should the Seahawks have done more to try to pick up Whitney Mercilus? I should include here that it was the Green Bay Packers that signed Mercilus today, just a few minutes ago.
Yeah. I don't think that on paper, Whitney Mercilus would have worked out here in Seattle. The reason why I say that is because Whitney Mercilus is more of an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme. Now, you could easily come back at me and say, well, Jake, what about watching Benson Mayoa have to drop back into coverage? Wouldn't you want a guy that can rush the passer and be good in that area and also have a background in being able to drop into coverage and be more sound and be more savvy in that situation than Benson Mayoa? The answer to that is touche. Like, anytime that you have an opportunity, he's 31 years old as well. So, again, it's not somebody who's young, but you're talking about hiring him for 1 year or for the rest of the season or seeing how these next couple games go. I don't know, man. I think that anybody that's generating 3 sacks in 6 games and not really being a full-time starter, somebody that I'm definitely interested in, somebody that you were able to make work like Carlos Dunlap a season ago, and right now you're not getting any production from any of your guys outside of Daryl Taylor on a consistent basis. So, yeah, I think Whitney Mercilus was somebody that they should have looked into, but I'm just telling you that difference, being an outside 3-4 linebacker versus being a true rush defensive end, was probably a big reason why they were not a part of that conversation.
Third down. All right. Mark Jackson's in this conversation. Kyler Murray's in this conversation. You could throw Derrick Henry in this conversation, maybe. Who do you believe is the MVP of the NFL right now?
Stacey, I'm going with the person that you mentioned last. Derrick Henry, to me, is my MVP of the NFL, and it's not even close. I mean, everybody knows going into the week that Derrick Henry is the guy that you have to stop. We knew that when the Seahawks were playing the Tennessee Titans, and guess what? You couldn't stop him. At some point, he broke free. At some point, he was able to wear that team down and have a major, major impact on the game. Derrick Henry is the number one reason why the Tennessee Titans are 4-2, and it's not even close. I mean, get this. 6 games. In 6 games, 783 yards. He's almost rushed for over 1,000 yards at this point. 783 yards, 4.8 yards per carry, and 10 total touchdowns. We're not even halfway through the season. I mean, this guy is putting up bonker numbers. It's crazy. And I know that this has turned into like a quarterback trophy, the MVP. But man, if there was ever a year, if he keeps this production up, there's ever a year to give it to somebody else other than a quarterback, I would definitely put my vote towards Derrick Henry.
Especially for a running back that's like regularly coming into contact with guys. Derrick Henry, for as much as he bulldozes through people, was the only starting running back last year to finish with 16 games. To start 16 games. He was the only one with over 1,000 yards to do that. So of the regular runners, of the guys that are getting the primary carries on a team, everyone missed at least one game. Except for Derrick Henry, who might be the most physical guy of them all. It's crazy what he's able to do. A fourth down. All right, like I said, Seahawks facing off against the Saints. Could be an opportunity for the defense here. So what are 2 things you hope to see from Seattle's defense?
Well, anytime you play against Jameis Winston, I know he's turned things around. He has done so much better in the turnover to interception ratio. That LASIK eye surgery, Stacey, did wonders for him. He's throwing 12 touchdowns to 3 interceptions right now. But he has coughed up some fumbles as well. And Jameis Winston, he just has those turnover tendencies. And so what I want to see, number one, is I want to see the defense create and cause turnovers, multiple turnovers, not just one, but multiple, whether that's in through a fumble or in an interception. I think there's opportunities to be had in this game. The second thing that I want to see, and I believe it's really important, is, yes, the pass rush is a focus that we really talked about and hit on all day yesterday, and that is a big part of it. But I really want to see Trey Brown, your 4th-round rookie, continue to shine. It was great to see him in the limited action and the limited role that he had against Pittsburgh, you know, play extremely well, come up with some big plays. But I want to see that continue. I want to see him to continue to stack together good performances and let that confidence soar. And if you can walk away from this season having 2 corners that you feel very confident in, man, that would be a big win, because As of right now, Trey Brown is the only guy that you have on this roster right now at the cornerback position that is signed to remain and stay with this team after this season. So you got to have something going for you in on that front. And Trey Brown playing well, playing big, and solidifying himself as a starter for this team, a legit starter, man, that would be great news.
All right, here's what I need from you guys. What I need to know is coming your way at 45 after. It's our final segment of the day where we turn it over to you guys and you get to send in any question you want. So I need those questions. 206-421-3776. Text any question you want. That's coming up in 15. First, though, is what we saw from the Seahawks in the second half on Sunday the team Seattle wants to be when Russell Wilson returns? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey
Ross. I feel
Ross.
Like I should ask Howdy's question that he just asked us, Curtis. For the text line, while I initiate some text from you guys, if you could send those in for what I need to know, any question you want, 206-421-3776. Howdy came by asking us, when it comes to baseball, because we were throwing the ball around football, a tiny, tiny little styrofoam football, is it have a catch or play catch? Was that what it was?
Yeah, it's play catch.
I don't know anyone that says have a catch, but I like the way it sounds.
I don't want to know anyone that says have a catch.
I'm going to purposely say it now.
You want to have a catch?
You want to have a catch?
No, I don't want to have a catch. I want to play catch.
I feel like a tiny British school child would say that. You want to go outside and have a catch?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Was what we saw from the Seahawks in the second half Sunday. The team Seattle wants to be when Russell Wilson returns. It's certainly what Pete Carroll thinks. Here's what he told Mike Salk.
A year ago, I think we were 5-0 or something like that, and you're flying and going.
I lied. That's not what he told Mike Salk. Sorry. Wrong cut here. Here's what he told Mike Salk.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And we did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
We all know Pete Carroll likes running the ball, but that's clearly his plan for while Geno Smith is under center and Russell Wilson is away. It sounds by the end of that, though, and Saul could point into this when that interview initially happened, that it sounds like it's how he wants to play when Russell Wilson returns. And while Pete says balanced football, I don't know that he means balanced football. Because let me tell you what, that drive heading out of the first half, the first drive of the third quarter, was a 10-play, 75-yard drive in which one play, a single play, a 9-yard pass, was the only pass play on that drive.
And that wasn't a designed pass play. That was what you would call a, it's a different form of an RPO. It's a run pass option where you have DK Metcalf, he's running a simple smoke screen, and based off the box numbers, based off of where the DB is playing on DK Metcalf, if he's playing 8 yards or more, if he's playing soft, and you feel like from Geno Smith's perspective, you can toss it out there and give DK Metcalf the opportunity to you know, make a positive run after catch, then yeah, you go and flip it out there. And that's what happened. It wasn't even a designed pass play.
I think what I'm curious about is, I mentioned this earlier because we talked about this earlier and we're just kind of moving the conversation forward, but the concept of running the ball more is not a bad concept. Like, I appreciate what Danny Kelly, who joined us from The Ringer, said. He was like, if you were to do that drive, if you do that 10-play drive with Alex Collins and it works for you every time, by all means, keep at it. By all means, if you're putting up 40 points in a game because you are running it 9 out of every 10 plays and it's working, fine. The problem is, what happens when it doesn't work? Because they'll run into that. What happens when it doesn't work? They might run into it against the Saints.
Well,
number two running offense, or excuse me, running defense in football.
Pete Carroll would tell you that, hey, when we're running the football, we have opportunities that present itself downfield because they have to respect the running game. And we've got two dynamic guys on the outside in Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf that can really burn you over the top. And so that really is the idea that Pete Carroll has in terms of this coming full circle offensively. But when that doesn't work, when offensively you're not able to run the football and do it effectively on first and second down, then yeah, you're putting yourself in a very difficult position. You're putting yourself in third and long, and you don't have a quarterback that you're willing to try to challenge for first downs by throwing beyond the sticks. You're throwing screen passes. You're running draw plays. You're running the ball and forfeiting the drive because you don't trust your quarterback to put it in harm's way, or you don't trust your pass protection in those situations. Those are difficult positions to put your quarterback in, and that is if it's not working. So if it's not working, it's going to be a long day. But if they can make it work and they can adopt that philosophy and they can adopt that physicality and lean on the offensive line to do what they did in the second half, yeah, no one's going to complain about it. But it's the NFL. It's really, really hard to do. It's really hard to physically be that dominant every game, game in, game out, when an opponent knows exactly what you want to do. And by the way, when it comes to your offense, when it comes to the way that you've approached the offseason, you didn't have this offense in mind for being a dominant, hard-nosed, downhill, you know, run-first-oriented offense. You had the approach of being a balanced offense, and more specifically, being more dynamic and diverse in your passing game. That's the reason why Shane Waldron was hired. That's the reason why you add Gerald Everett. It's not that you think that those two are going to be the key to you being the number one rushing offense in the NFL. So, you know, I think that that's the part that makes it extremely difficult, is that you're trying to be great at something when you're heel turning your identity in the middle of a season. And we'll see if they can do it successfully or not. Not just 1 week, not just for a half, but for an extended period of time when you have 11 games left in the season. Is that who you can be?
And some breaking news here. Who has that one, Curtis?
Mike Garofalo.
Mike Garofalo says, reports that the Seahawks have claimed quarterback Jacob Eason, who was waived.
Wow.
The other day.
Okay.
What all
right.
About that?
Skinny coming to town. All right. I'm excited about that. Excited to have Jacob Eason here in Seattle. I'll be curious to see what that means when it comes to Jake Luton or anybody else that has been. Danny Etling was the other quarterback that was on the roster at the time. So I'll be very curious to see what that means. But that's exciting. That's really cool. And, you know, when you have a talented kid like Jacob Eason, I'm very curious to see how that goes. And somebody that I work with closely and know very well. So having Russ and Jacob Eason in the, you know, same QB room is pretty fun.
It is interesting, though, because Jacob Eason, nothing like Russell Wilson. And I feel like a lot of it is just, let's get just quarterbacks in here. Let's sign someone just to get an extra person. But there are no crossovers here in terms of playing style to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is no crossover, but there wasn't any crossover when it came to Jake Luton. There wasn't any crossover when it was Sean Mannion. So clearly there's a type of quarterback that they are looking at that they want to develop and evaluate. And when you have somebody that's open, you know, this isn't Jacob Eason being a free agent and that they signed. I mean, they claimed him off waivers. So they believe in his talents and they're excited to take a closer look at him and see what he can be as he develops within the program. So I'll be curious to see how that develops. But very shocking to see that happen. I wasn't expecting that whatsoever.
Are you texting him right now?
Yeah, I am actually.
Jake, pull down his phone.
Well, I mean, it's breaking news. So
sure,
yeah, I want to text him.
All right.
I mean, this is awesome.
What I need to know is coming your way next. Here's how it works. You send in a question, any question, multiple questions if you want, and we answer them. We debate them between ourselves. We talk about them. So any question, send it right now to 206-421-3776. That is the Mac and Jack's text line, and your questions are coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Get your questions in right now for What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. That number to text is 206-421-3776. We'll start with this one. Jake, do you do the voice of Chip in the windshield commercial?
I am a part of the commercial, but I don't do voice.
You don't do Chip's voice.
No,
I'm not.
I'm not
you're
that
playing both characters.
I'm not that talented.
You're not
I'm
like
sorry. I mean,
Lindsay Lohan in The Parent Trap.
Yeah, I know you guys love Chip's voice, and I'm sorry. I don't have that talent to get myself to do that. I wish I did.
From the 206, what I need to know, aside from her keto cereal, does Stacy also eat quinoa regularly? I don't. But you guys
you don't?
Make fun of a lot of my
eating. Do you like quinoa? I actually
yeah.
like quinoa.
Yeah, I like quinoa. Quinoa's
it's good.
Fine.
Yeah, but I have quinoa with other things in a meal that are delicious
I
and
have
good
it with other
and tasty.
Things. Chicken, salmon, veggies.
Okay, that's normal.
Yeah.
That's yeah. normal.
I eat like a normal person.
I don't know if you do, though.
That's, I don't think you do.
That's debatable.
I don't
Very
think
debatable.
You do.
How about this one? What I need to know is DK's attitude going to be a detriment? Seems to make decisions without the team in mind. I don't get that.
No, I mean, come on. You're talking about a series of tweets. Does that really... Is that really what you're talking about here? And ultimately, this is, you know, somebody who's young, who is going through the process. They're going to make mistakes. And then what did he do? He came back and he essentially apologized. He made right by it. So, you know, it's nothing like we haven't seen in this town before. DK is not even doing anything near what the group did here during the Legion of Boom era. I mean, DK's got personality. And
I think that as a wide receiver with a lot of personality,
you're gonna
who was on a
like
big
this.
Stage, it'll be that... the idea that you're a diva will always be one step behind you. Like, it doesn't take much for people to be convinced that very kind of loud wide receiver is a
right.
diva, when in reality, like, I don't get that impression from him at all.
No, not at all. And again, DK's decision to catch the ball and turn up field, I don't have any problem with that. Now, DK having the ball in the wrong hand when he's on the sideline and obviously fumbling the football, you can't do that. You've got to step out of bounds. You've got to know and understand your situation. But overall, these are things that are easily fixed, and we're all grateful today that it didn't end up costing them. But that's not a decision based off of selfishness. It's a decision by being an elite competitor, trying to do everything he can to help the team. It just wasn't the right thought process.
Oh,
it's ridiculous.
This is a great question. From the 253, I need to know if Stacy can talk in her British accent for an entire segment.
No.
Yes, I can.
For the entire segment.
Here we go to the next question.
Stacy, stop.
Well, I need to know.
No. No more.
Why?
Because this isn't even a British voice. This is annoying British
voice.
Jake,
why are the Seahawks not running jet sweeps with DK to get the defense moving?
I'm so sorry.
I'm a little British schoolboy. That's the question. Why aren't the Seahawks running jet sweeps with DK?
Because DK Metcalf, they can run jet sweeps with him, but at the same time, you don't need to constantly be running jet sweeps with DK Metcalf. I think Freddie Swain's done a good job with it. Tyler's done a good job with it. It's something that I would have thought would have been a little bit more mixed in, but that's why when we talk about the decision to draft D. Eskridge, that's why, because that would have been D. Eskridge's role, very clear cut to be that player, to be that weapon. And they want to use that third receiver in more of that role than they do necessarily somebody like DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. And DK's got elite speed. DK can make guys miss, but he's not necessarily somebody that I would have running back punts or running back kick returns. And you need somebody dynamic, elusive, with the ball in their hands, and I don't really think that's DK's game. Could they do it every now and then? Sure, absolutely.
The entire text line just, no!
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. at this point...
I'd rather listen to Chip's voice.
What? Wow. No, you wouldn't.
That's what the texter says.
I'm not that annoying. I mean, I'm very annoying, but not that annoying. What I need to know at this point, the defensive issues have to be Norton in the scheme base, right? We have too much talent for the defensive crew to be underperforming, especially 2 years in a row.
There is strong reason to definitely be pointing at that and point the finger at that. I mean, I don't see this as an issue of, well, are we running the ball effectively? I think this conversation has turned very much focused on the offense, when in reality the defense has been a consistent problem and is a big issue. And when you have, you know, that area of the ball performing like they have, it makes it extremely difficult also on your offense to have to carry that weight. And so it all works hand in hand. But yeah, I mean, I really am going to be paying attention to how this defense holds up over the next couple weeks, and especially when they play the Green Bay Packers and the Arizona Cardinals after the bye week coming up in back-to-back weeks?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. I think it's a mix of personnel. I don't know that I look at the defense and think, wow, this is a defense that on talent alone. Curtis, why are you laughing?
What I need to know was Stacey and Sweeney Todd, the Demon Baba of Fleet Street.
I do regret that I couldn't make my British accent sound a little more posh.
Hello, it's me.
No, I still can't do it. It's just higher. No, I think part of it is talent acquisition. It's just a lot of missed draft picks. I mean, Malik McDowell, when you tried to replace the entire Legion of Boom and you got Lano Hill, Tedrick Thompson, Mike Tyson, and Shaquille Griffin, none of those guys ended up staying into a second deal with you. And the one who only became a starter left in free agency. The last real like pro bowler, not alternate, but like a pro bowler you drafted is Frank Clark, and you traded him away, which made sense at the time. But then you used that pick to get LJ Collier, who's been a healthy scratch four times in six games. So I think that just as much as scheme or just as much as coaching, personnel acquisition and drafting has been a problem. I think the good news, if you're looking at it, is that Daryl Taylor, a second round pick, is having a great start to the season. So, like, I don't want to completely harp on it. But there's question marks there for drafting in general.
I will. I mean, it's something that you're looking at for how the team is built over the last couple years. It's directly because of that situation. So just because there's one guy that pops and one guy that stands out doesn't mean it negates all of the other misses. It's a nice development. It's hopefully something that you can build upon as you move forward. But in terms of talking about the here and now, yeah, it's very prevalent.
What I need to know related to the defense, this person wants to know if Carlos Dunlap is going to start being motivated. I think that he's motivated. I don't think it's Carlos Dunlap not being motivated. I think Carlos Dunlap is like 32. And it's just this defensive line as a whole has not been able to be as disruptive as they'd like. But I see Carlos Dunlap as being very much a leader on the team, very motivated, a big, high energy guy, despite being one of the older players, really high energy in training camp.
Yeah, I think that all those things are there for Dunlap. I also believe that his usage has gone down. It hasn't been quite the same as what it was a season ago, and I wonder why that is the case, to be honest with you. But, you know, I think that they're very much going with the hot hand right now. Carlos, we're giving you opportunities in the game. Are you making the most of it? No? Okay, we're going to get somebody else in there. And so I don't know if this is a usage problem where he needs to continue to keep getting those opportunities, or as you said, he's just at the other side of his career. And last year was that last season that you were able to generate that spark from him and get him playing, you know, his last season of really good football. I mean, that definitely could be the case here.
From Fred in Birch Bay, Curtis, when Stacey goes British again, play Kenny Rogers. No one to hold him, no one to fold him.
No one to walk away.
We're walking away now. That'll do it for us today. For Curtis Rogers, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.